5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, I want to welcome you back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Remember to listen to the show on the go. You can just download the Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store, and you can listen on any computer or smart device by going to streamysr.com. That is streamysr.com. Normal data rates apply. And as always, we deliver the biggest and the very best in sports. You will want to stay close. Two-time NBA champion with the San Antonio Spurs. He had a 13-year NBA career. Malik Rose, he is everywhere. Of course, he is the color analyst with the Philadelphia 76ers, and we always enjoy his work on NBA TV and NBA radio. It's his first time on the show. Good evening, Malik. It's so nice to have you on. Thank you.
Man, I'm going to hire you to be like my theme music or whatever. That was a hell of an introduction. Thank you for having me, Alyssa, and thanks for the introduction.
Hey, we got a power up. It is Malik Rose. So let's talk here. Big news for the 76er fans this week as they finished third in the NBA draft lottery on Tuesday night for the second consecutive season and fourth time overall. Malik, what is the biggest need for the Sixers? I mean, who should they be targeting? Is there a clear choice?
Oh, man, how much time do we have?
Go for it.
The Sixers, they have quite a few needs. Like some of the, the other teams that didn't fare as well as they wanted to fare last season record-wise. The Sixers have a lot of holes to fill. But the city really, it's odd because Philadelphia is one of the more impatient fans. They have one of the fan bases that are some of the most impatient fans. And they've really been behind this plan that Sam Hinkie has laid out. They are patient and they're waiting. They're seeing what's happening with Nerlens Noel and Joel Embiid. Mm-hmm. And now they get to add another piece to that puzzle with the third pick in this year's upcoming draft. So we'll see who they're going to get. But the fans are behind it and the plan is in place.
Well, you know, the Sixers, they're impatient, as you were talking about, but they're a very proud organization. I mean, they've produced some legendary basketball talents in Julius Erving and Moses Malone and Charles Barkley. And so my question to you is, as we look at the void that they need to fill, who do you believe would be the best point guard in this year's draft for the Sixers?
Yeah, being as though the Sixers have, two big guys in Nerlens Noel and Joel Embiid, I would think, conventional wisdom would have them looking for a guard. And fortunately for them, there are two pretty good guards in this draft. Emmanuel Mudiay, the kid that out of Texas, I'm sure you know him, and
yes,
he played over China last year. Mm-hmm. And D'Angelo Russell out of Ohio State. So both those guys are really, really good. They have the measurables, like the body of today's guard, man. I mean, today's NBA point guard is 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", and long and athletic. And both these guys are about 6'5", and long. But they have, similar games, but a few differences. I think Mudiay is the more the better penetrator. He can get to the rack better, mm-hmm, but I think D'Angelo Russell is a better shooter. And depending on which way the Sixers want to go, they'll decide between those two. But I don't think there's a wrong choice, when it comes to both those guards.
NBA great and analyst with the Philadelphia 76ers, Malik Rose, is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are interactive. We would absolutely love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at eRadioSports, and you can always email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. So just some curiosity on my part. I mean, if the Sixers could somehow draft one of these dynamic guards and continue to build on this young roster, how many more wins are we looking at for next season? Come on, be optimistic, Malik.
Okay, I'll be optimistic and say, I would say hopefully 25 to 30. Last year they had 17. It was a tough year, man. Injuries kind of hurt them, but the Sixers, they were kind of like auditioning any and everybody last year. So the team never really got any chemistry kind of. I mean, they weren't like at each other's throats, but it was hard to get a rhythm because there was always somebody new on the team because Sam Hinkie wanted to look at so many different people. This year, you know, I hope there's less of that as far as the revolving door to the locker room. And I think I hope they start to, you know, build a little bit more of a foundation. I like what I see in Joel Embiid, man. I mean, this guy has the upside to be like a franchise changer. I mean, he is legitimately 7'1", you know, just good NBA body, and he has skills. I mean, the guy has good footwork. He can catch the ball, and he has the range out to the three-point line. So he could be somebody that the Sixers build around, and he could be here for a long time. You add in a Nerlens Noel, who was an all-rookie team this year, first-team all-rookie, and, you know, maybe one of the guards in Moutier or D'Angelo Russell, then you kind of have a core, and hopefully we can see some things start to take shape for the Sixers.
How fired up do you get about this year's draft? I mean, is it more for the fans? I mean, we're talking about these guys. I mean, the young pups, they're unproven. I mean, what gets me fired up is when you start talking about free agents. I mean, these guys are going to make an immediate difference.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, man. It could be football, baseball, or basketball, but people go crazy for the draft. We haven't even had the draft yet. We had the lottery, which is going to determine the draft, but I think it's just the excitement of, you know, what's new and what's exciting, what's sexy and you know, hip. And these new guys, you know, Jahlil Okafor, Karl-Anthony Towns, Moutier, Russell, all these guys, I mean, they just, you know, add to that or whatever. And I think it's all good stuff for the league. And the more excitement we can have about the game of basketball, our game, I think the better. So I'm going to stay getting excited about the draft and the lottery and the like.
Hey, Malik Rose is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. You can listen to him everywhere on NBA Radio. You can watch him on NBA TV and, of course, the color announcer with the Sixers. And I know earlier this week, Malik, you had an opportunity to sit down and talk to Tyus Jones, and he's projected to be, what, a mid to late first-round pick. What were your impressions of him?
Yeah, I watched him as a player, and I liked the confidence he played with as a player. I mean, he was never afraid to take big shots, and for a freshman, he really never seemed to be fazed by the big moments, especially the Final Four in the championship game. And when we had a chance to sit down with him, Justin Termini and myself, we kind of got that from him as far as just a confident player. He had a level of humility, and you know, he was just confident in his abilities. And we hit him with some tough questions. I remember asking Tyus about, you know, the fact that he's not 6'4", and he's not, you know, overly athletic or overly quick, but you know, he's still able to be effective. He was most outstanding player in the Final Four. How does he think his game is going to translate to the next level? What's he going to do when he plays bigger, faster, more athletic guards? And he recognized the other guards in the NBA, the top guards, you know, the challenge they face. But he seems really confident in his abilities to, one, hold his own, and two, learn enough where one day he could compete with them. And I like that.
Yeah, you talk about him being confident in his abilities. I mean, he's made the statement that he believes he is the most pure point guard in the league. Do you agree?
He probably is, just because of, you know, his floor game as far as, like, you know, anticipating the play. You know, he played for Coach K, so he's like, you know, he has two jobs out there on the floor, two point guard jobs. You know, he has to make sure everybody's
right.
In the right place. Every turnover is his fault and stuff. So I would say, yeah, he's probably from an intellectual part of it. He's probably the best pure point guard in this draft, but that's not a slight on anyone else because I think D'Angelo Russell, even though Moutier may be better at getting to the rack than he is, D'Angelo Russell sees the game, at least from what I can see from watching tape on him. He sees the game on closer to a pro level, being as though he can anticipate plays developing, and you can see like the passes out of his hands before the play is finishing being developed. So I like that. It sees, you know, shows a high basketball IQ for him, and I think there are some really, really good guards. I mean, in the top, middle, and bottom of the first round, you're going to see quite a few point guards being scooped up.
As we zero in on Tyus Jones, I mean, of course, he finished his college career, you know, winning everything, you know, winning a national title. What did he share with you about having the opportunity to play for Coach K? Because that's priceless.
Yeah, he talked about, you know, plenty of the lessons he learned from Coach K, but the main thing, I asked him to zero in on one, and he talked about communicating. You know, being a leader, he has to be able to, you know, communicate with his teammates, listen to them definitely, but being the ultimate communicator out there helped him be a better leader, and that's one of the lessons he took from Coach K that he he's going to lean on most, he said, when he gets to the NBA.
76ers color analyst Malik Rose is with us tonight at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. We've got to step aside, and we'll be right back with much, much more. And Malik Rose. Hey, we are so glad you're with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell as we take you through the fastest 2 hours in radio. It is hour number two right here at YSR, and we are going one-on-one with Malik Rose, of course, the 76ers color commentator, NBA champ in 99 and 2003. We want to quickly take time to relive some of those memories with the Spurs, but continue to give us a recap as far as the Sixers this past season and perhaps the type of growth and improvement that you were able to witness.
Yeah, it was really cool to watch the team. And, you know, for a team that lost 65 games this year, you know, one would think it would have been a nightmare. And it really wasn't, man. One thing I always tipped my cap to the Sixers on was each and every night. I could count on one hand max, the amount of games they actually came out and laid an egg. And, you know, you're down 25 by the first time out in the first quarter. And, you got to, like, sell Kool-Aid the rest of the game. It wasn't like that. These kids played hard, man, and they never really looked at their record. Like, they just thought they could get better each and every day, and I think that's a tribute to, one, them, but, two, their coaching staff. I thought Brett Brown did a really good job, and his staff, keeping these young guys, you know, focused on the job at hand, getting them motivated to play each and every day. And I'd say 95% of the time, man, they came out, they gave everything they had, you know, in their shirts, left it on the floor. And that made my job, selfishly, made my job as a color commentator easy, because I wasn't, like, you know, commentating a mop-up game or something. Like, they competed every night, and they got better, to answer your question. Towards the end of the year, this team, man, I swear, like, I used to joke on air at the beginning of the season that they defended worse than a court-appointed lawyer. But towards the end of the year, man, you're looking at a team that was flirting with the top 10 and as far as defensive efficiency goes. So that's really, really a great testament to the hard work they put in, the perseverance they displayed, and I was glad they were rewarded with that.
You know, Malik, I was going to ask you, how difficult was that for you as a color analyst to, you know, keep that energy up, keep those fans believing? Because let's think back, let's reflect what they were 0-17 when they started off this season.
Man, yeah. I didn't think we'd get a win in the calendar year back in 2014, you know, some of those games, man.
But you got to believe,
again,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, right? It was like, and to, like, to their credit again, they were the only ones that believed they were going to, you know, win that game. And I think it was Minnesota. At Minnesota, they got their first win, man. And the plane ride back was fun because those guys kind of, it was like a collective exhale, and, you know, they celebrated a little bit. And it was good to see them, you know, smile and be rewarded, because they were putting in honest days worked, man. I mean, for a team that was 0-17, you would think they'd be slacking off and playing and joking and not taking the game seriously. They just, you know, they didn't have much talent. They couldn't compete talent-wise on a night-in, night-out basis most of the time. And in the beginning of the season, it caught them by storm, took them by storm, and it took them a while to learn how to deal with that.
Just a few more minutes with Malik Rose tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. And you were talking about the job that Brett Brown has done. He's entering in, what, to his third season. How big of a challenge is that for him to coach these 20-year-olds, to help them understand, and, you know, what the NBA culture, what it's all about, and to grow these guys up?
Man, it's funny you brought that up, because I remember talking to Brett about that. You know, we spent time back in San Antonio when we were beating up on a Dallas Maverick together.
Go easy. Come on, Emily.
Yeah, I hear you. No, but, you know, Brett Brown, you know, he spent his first, 12, 13 years in the league, maybe 15 years in the league, with San Antonio, with, like, a veteran group like that. And he said one of the things he struggled with was, you know, these guys are 19, 20 years old, and they've never really been coached like that, or, you know, like the verbiage he was saying. Like, in San Antonio, they could change things on the fly, and, you know, if they wanted to trap a pick and roll, they, you know,
we will
black 40 or black 20 or something like that. But here in Philadelphia, he had to call a timeout, draw it up, explain to these guys in no uncertain terms what he wanted them to do. And he said it was just a laborious, a laborious project, because it took so much work to get something like that done. But He enjoyed the challenge, and, you know, those guys are in the gym right now working. So I really think they're improving on that, and maybe they'll be able to, you know, make changes on the fly next year.
Very special interview tonight with Malik Rose, NBA champ, two-time NBA champ, of course, played for the league's best in Greg Popovich, won two titles. I got to ask you this. What were some of the lessons that he taught you?
Man, Pop was a great teacher, man. I mean, he's definitely a mentor in my life to this day. I mean, I can call that guy with a question and he'll give me his honest, unbiased answer. But I think mostly, like, hard work, he really taught me, you know, the value, I guess, of a day's work. And one of the lessons, like, you know, I was All-American in college and, you know, thought I could do this, that, and the third. But when I got to the NBA, I mean, it was a sobering, you know, wake-up call. And he taught me that it's not about me, it's about the team. And that's one of the biggest lessons. Like, I always thought if I didn't win my individual battle out there on the floor, I didn't have numbers, you know, to show for a night's work, that I let the team down. And he said, no, as long as we collectively get done what we want to get done, you're part of a unit. You know, we all succeed, but don't look at it on an individual basis. Look at it on the team basis. And that really helped me, because I used to really kind of, you know, crucify myself if I didn't play as well as I thought I should have.
Okay, Malik Rose has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. My final question for you is, when is Tim Duncan? Is this going to be his last season? When's he going to retire?
I hope he gets one more in. After 20, he can do what he wants. But if he finishes, you know, a cool 20, man, that'll be saying something, man. I mean, that guy was, I mean, 19 years in the league. 19.
Incredible.
I mean, I joke with him, like, he's 130 years old, has one good knee, and still went out there, averaged 17, 11, and 2, and made third-team All-NBA. I mean, that means he was one of the top, what, six or seven power forwards in the game at age 39. In his 19th year in the league, man. I mean, he is truly the best power forward ever to play, in my humble estimation.
It's been truly an honor to have with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, the great Malik Rose. We so enjoy your work, and we'll stay tuned, okay?
Thank you, Alyssa. Thanks for having me. Have a good holiday.
Absolutely. You too. Be safe. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, as we continue with our NBA talk. Okay, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Remember to listen to the show on the go. Just download the Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store. You can also listen on any computer, smart device by going to streamysr.com. That's streamysr.com. Normal data rates apply. Right now, it is time to shift gears. In our final segment tonight, we're going to shine the spotlight and have a book review. This is always so fun. We're going to catch up with a very passionate baseball fan. He is an author, Eric Kabakoff. He has just released his new book. It is titled... and you will want to go out and get a copy of it. It's titled Rally Caps, Rain Delays, and Racing Sausages. Eric, of course, I have to share with you guys, he is such an ambitious guy. He visited every home park of every major league franchise to see up close how each team tries to stir the passion of its fans. How long did you have the desire to visit every major league park? I mean, because I tell you what, that's a tremendous feat, and I can't even imagine how expensive that was, too.
Well, you know, I grew up a Yankee fan, and when I got older, I started thinking about seeing some other parks, and if I had a wedding in Los Angeles or so, I went to a Dodgers game. I was visiting some friends in Washington, went to a Nationals game, and over time, I realized, you know, I'd been to 9 or 10 ballparks, and it occurred to me that if I could get the remaining parks that were around the country, then it would be a great way to see baseball. It would be a great way to see the country. I mean, I think that 4 to 5 a year was an ambitious goal. You know, I couldn't exactly take a summer off and just go visit all of them. So I did a few a year and did a lot of long weekends. And about 5 and a half years later, I had completed the project. And then I started putting all my thoughts together into this book.
Oh, that's so cool. You're talking about the Yankees, how much you love them. But what was the first game that you ever attended? Was it a Yankees game or was it like a Phillies? Or
no. Actually, it was Phillies. I have a lot of family in the Philadelphia area. And when I was 10 years old, back in 1985, Marty McFly hadn't even hopped in the DeLorean yet. And there I was at my first ever baseball game.
Love it.
At Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia. And Mike Schmidt was still playing. I got to see him. Steve Carlton was on the team.
Oh, yeah.
Day. And it was just a wonderful experience. I mean, the Vet is no great shakes by the standards of modern ballparks. But it was a very special experience for me. I mean, it started my love of the game was first ignited, I guess. And then later on, I went to Yankee games. My father was a Yankee fan, so I grew up as a Yankee fan. And I got to see Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle at Old Timers Day one year. And just fell in love with the history and the legacy of the game. And over time, I thought, you know, let me see what other ballparks have to offer. What do other teams do? You know, the Yankees, they sell their nostalgia. They sell their legacy, and they're successful over the years. And they, I mean, they might retire two more numbers by the time this show is over, the way they've been going. But the other teams don't, a lot of them don't have that kind of luxury. The newer teams, the Colorado Rockies never even had a Hall of Famer play for them. They just recently retired their first player number, Todd Helton, last year. So what do? They had a wall of achievement. They showed a wall of the all-star appearances and different achievements that their individual players have had over the years. The Diamondbacks, another newer team, will do, you know, when you talk about their history, you talk about Cy Young Awards that Randy Johnson won, and you talk about the 2001 World Series. So other than that, they didn't really have a whole lot of history to go by. So they played up those two things. They played up the area. They played up, you know, the snakes in the area, and then all the history of the geographical area and what the team did have to offer. And so every team does things differently, and that was what was one of the joys of this project.
Okay, you're listening to the voice of Eric Kabakoff. He is the author of his new book, Rally Caps, Rain Delays, and Racing Sausages. And, you know, you think about baseball. I mean, it has such a rich, a deep history in our country. And obviously your goal was, like you said, it wasn't just to have the opportunity to take in a ball game, but, you know, just to get a sense of how things were different at all the different parks. I mean, you know, the casual fans as opposed to, like, the committed fans. What did you see there?
Well, you know, that's when you get to see, being right in the seats, that's when you get to see the things that are not on TV, the things between innings. When you're watching a game on television, you watch the commercials between innings. If you go to a Nationals game, you watch the racing presidents, you know, Jefferson and Taft and Washington and Lincoln trying to win a foot race out in the field there. In Milwaukee, the racing sausages, the chorizo and the Italian and Polish sausages, the hot dog and the bratwurst, made such an impression on me that I put them in the book's title.
I love it, yeah.
That's a big beer and brats town. They do the polka. I do a polka song, Roll Out the Barrel, I believe it's called, after the in the seventh inning stretch. You don't get that in any other ballpark for sure. And when the Rangers score a run, their flag girls come out in Greensfield behind the outfield there. They come and run out with a Texas flag. You wouldn't see that in any other ballpark, any other state. I can't imagine the Tampa Rays, the Tampa Rays running out the Florida flag every time the Rays scored a run. It just, you wouldn't see that there. Or the Colorado fans seeing the state of Colorado flag when the Rockies score. Only in Texas, the proudest state in the Union, is where you're going to see that. In Houston, I got to hear people, this wasn't even part of the game, but people sat behind us talking about hunting quail and the best ways and techniques and methods for hunting quail. And you wouldn't get that. You certainly would never get that in New York, at any ballpark in New York, and most ballparks around the country as well. It was quite the experience seeing these things.
Hey, Eric Kabakoff is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. Absolutely love hearing from you. Join us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. So what keeps these fans coming back for more? What stirs the fans' passion?
Well, you know, it's these shared memories, the legacies of shared experiences that people have through the years. I became a Yankee fan because my father was a Yankee fan and his father a Yankee fan before that.
Mm-hmm.
In New England, you've got the entire New England area is Red Sox Nation. In 2004, when the Red Sox finally broke through and won the World Series after 86 years, people were going to cemeteries and visiting their loved ones who didn't live to see their beloved Red Sox win a World Series. The passions went back so far there. And you see in Milwaukee, like I said, the racing sausages, and in Washington, you have the newer Nationals. So they stir it up with things that are unique to their city, like the racing presidents. And, of course, the flag girls in Houston and in Texas. And in Philadelphia, they've got the Liberty Bell. So you've got, of course, that place is at Citizens Bank Park, is every inch Philadelphia. And out in San Francisco, one of my favorite ballparks, and really probably one of the best in the league by many measures, they've got the great view of the bay there and out in the Covey Cove, and you've got the area where the boats, they wait with the boats and for the balls to come over the right field wall. And it's just a gorgeous park with gorgeous views. And the food there is also incredible because it's true to San Francisco. San Francisco's got a great culinary legacy, and it's all encapsulated right there in the ballpark. So now each ballpark really encapsulates its city, whereas in the 70s and 80s, you really didn't have that. You had a lot of, I guess they call them concrete donuts, where you had these antiseptic ballparks. The Phillies, the Indians, the Pirates all had the Reds out in Riverfront Stadium. There were these stadiums that all looked the same, and they were built for baseball, football, the rodeo, whatever happened to come to town. And the ball players themselves would talk about how sometimes they would go to a city and they wouldn't even know where they were until they looked at the uniforms of the opposing players on the field. But now, starting with Camden Yards in 1992, all the ballparks really have are built with their own character. And they're true to the city. Baltimore, right in the harbor, rejuvenated the whole area. This retro ballpark with a brick facade. And then you've got Citi Field, which calls out Ebbets Field in many, many ways. So back in Brooklyn, where the Dodgers played before, the Brooklyn Trolley Dodgers played before they moved out to Los Angeles back in 1957. So you've got all kinds of things going on there. And you've got many different callbacks to ballparks as well. In Houston, you've got a callback to an old ballpark in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Yankee Stadium calls back, you know, to the other Yankee Stadium, I suppose. But everybody does things in accordance with their own legacy and their own history and really their own geography and the legacy that they have with their fans.
What ballpark has the very best food?
Well, I would say San Francisco. They have food that's true to the culinary nature of their town. And you get the sushi. That's the first place you could go to get collard fries.
Wow.
Now you can get them anywhere.
Uh-huh.
You never used to be able to get those anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think they mm-hmm. may have it. But I tell you, one time when I was in Minneapolis, and this was at the old Metrodome,
uh-huh.
I had a hot dog with 12 toppings. And the thing took a year off my life. But having a hot dog with coleslaw and baked beans in addition to 10 other toppings was
uh-huh.
mind-blowing. My buddy and I, who went to this game years ago, still talk about that hot dog. My boss would come in and ask me if I was ready for the meeting, and I'd tell him about the hot dog. You know, so it made quite an impression on me, for sure. I don't know if it's in the new Target Field. I have to find that out. I really hope so, because that was well worth it.
Congratulations on the book. Of course, it's titled Rally Caps, Rain Delays, and Racing Sausages. It's been such a pleasure to have you with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
It has been an incredible 2 hours right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Thank you so much for joining us. You just heard from Eric Kabakoff, author of his new book, Rally Caps, Rain Delays, and Racing Sausages. It is a must read. Elissa Walker-Campbell, I want to welcome you back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Remember to listen to the show on the go. Just download the Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store. And you can also listen on any computer or smart device by going to streamysr.com. That is streamysr.com. Normal data rates apply. So right now in our next segment, it is time to tee it up. And we're going to shine the spotlight on how to learn the do's and don'ts of golf with etiquette expert Peter Post. Peter is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line, and he has just released his new book, The Unwritten Rules of Golf. Good evening, Peter. It is so nice to have you with us this weekend.
It's a pleasure to be with you, too. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, sir. And summer is just around the corner. Golf season is in full swing. So I thought, you know, it's a perfect time to brush up on our golf etiquette and the unwritten rules. I want you to break it down. I mean, golf is the only sport where how you treat other people in the game is as important as the actual game itself. I mean, we know the rules for playing golf are clearly defined, but how golfers expect other golfers to comport themselves before, during, and after a round, I think is less codified. So what was the goal of your book?
Yeah, the goal of the book was to really bring those unwritten rules, not the how to swing the ball, but how to interact with the golfers that you're going to be playing with and the other golfers, and make that information available, kind of like put it down on paper where both a new golfer could find out about those things, because they're very nervous about that. They worry about being able to, you know where to stand and what to do and all those things. At the same time, frankly, there's some experienced golfers out there that don't have to get it all right, and they could use a little refresher course as well. So it was for both groups that I wanted to be able to produce a book that didn't tell them how to swing, but it told them how they could get people to want to play golf with them.
And I have to wonder, too, Peter, just how much fun was it putting this particular book together? I know you've produced some in the past, but, I mean, I just have to assume just a tremendous response from some of the stories on golf etiquette and what they should be doing out on the course.
It was so easy. I put up a survey. I asked people to tell me their stories.
Right.
Stories galore. Mm. And, you know, the guys that I play with, mm. I mean, they're in the book. And the stories are real. The ones that I tell are real stories with my real the guys that I play with every Thursday afternoon, in fact. You know, it was really fun because they got right into it. I even asked them to read the manuscript and make sure that they saw what I saw out there, and that they felt that it was really an accurate representation, even if it made a little bit of fun of them at the same time. So it was like this group effort in some ways. It was just it was more fun to do. I can't tell you how much fun I had doing this project.
I love listening to your enthusiasm in your voice. What do you love about golf the most? Because one of the things, as a mother of two young sons and two junior golfers, I mean, what I love is just it's a game of sportsmanship. And to go through your book, it was so refreshing just on, you know, remembering how to behave accordingly.
Yeah. I think the thing I enjoy about it as much as anything else is the camaraderie. The guys that I play with, that I played with for 20 years, and we get together every week and we play a game of golf. And, you know, we can put everything aside and just get out there. And for 4 hours, you know, the work isn't involved in it, the problems at home or whatever else might be out there. That's not part of it. What's part of it is four guys who can get together and just have a common interest and enjoy each other's company. And then the golf is almost secondary at times. I mean, you know, yeah, you might have a little bet, you might do a little bit of this or that, but really, it's the fun of being with these people and enjoying it. And that's, again, why I love doing the book, because what it helps people understand is so much about golf is about how you get along with the other people. And if you get along with them well, you get invited back. And frankly, if you don't do those things well, and if you do things that really frustrate other golfers, you're going to find yourself playing all by yourself.
Author Peter Post is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're talking about his brand new book, The Unwritten Rules of Golf by Peter Post. And you had said that, you know, you had posted a survey on the Emily Post Institute website explaining your project, outlining, you know, what is the biggest complaint? So what were some of those top frustrations from golfers and some of that obnoxious behavior out there?
Sure. The by far, number one complaint, frustration with slow play.
Oh, yes.
It just drives people crazy. You know, almost two-thirds of the people, that was their number one complaint. They just, and they wanted to know both how to deal with it in their own group, how to deal with it with other groups, what kinds of strategies were out there to be able to avoid it yourself. And all those things were all part of the whole chapter that's just on slow play.
Okay, so how do you deal with it? I mean, you buy them a round of beer? I mean, what do you do to get those guys and gals to be moving forward?
Yeah, if it's a group that's in front of you, it may even involve how you ask them if you can play through. And, you know, a guy I played with one day walked up to a group in front of us playing slow, and he asked them if it would help them if we played through. And I thought, what a brilliant way to put that. Suddenly you made it like you were going to help them out and make them feel more comfortable because you'd take it on yourself to quickly play through. Instead of saying, you guys are really playing through. You're a bunch of idiots. We need to get by you. And these guys immediately said, oh, well. Yeah, thank you. We'd love to go ahead and have you play through. And it was like clear sailing for the rest of the day. So it was a little bit of a how in that case of how do you deal with it? Otherwise, you know, you can always take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and literally just walk around a hole, skip a hole, and go by them. And I think that's another way to deal with it. You can try to get a ranger to talk to them, but that sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. Those are three strategies for it that can help you.
Okay, we're visiting with Peter Post tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, talking about the new book, The Unwritten Rules of Golf. So tell us about the layout of the book. I mean, what can readers expect?
They can expect to find out right from before you arrive at a golf course, what things to be thinking about, what kind of clothes you're going to be wearing, what kind of place you're going to be going to, what kind of rules they may have at a golf club itself so that you're aware of how to deal with things in a way that doesn't end up embarrassing yourself. So it deals with attire, the clothing to wear in a golf outing, and thinking about what you want to be wearing and maybe some of the mistakes some people have made when they've gone out there in something that was really not the right golf attire. And then it talks about thinking about what happens as you've arrived at the course and you're dealing with the club itself, the environment, things like cell phones and those kinds of things. Do you turn them off? How do you handle yourself with that? Those rules that exist at a club. And then the first tee, making sure you're on time. Don't be late. That's a key piece of advice for the thing. Once you're on the course, it's playing the course. And some of the advice for both where you stand and who hits first and how do you do all that kind of stuff, to fixing divots, to dealing with pinniquette, which I call. That's pin etiquette. And handling yourself around the greens. And then finally, you know, after the round, we talk about the 19th hole. We talk a little bit about going to events and sort of wrap it up. And that's the totality of the thing, how you deal with how you deal with your spouse who you shouldn't be giving advice to out on the golf course. So, you know, it's all these different things that happen out there, and it has nothing to do with how you swing the club, but boy, it sure matters as to how you're viewed by the other people.
Well, and Peter, you talk about that in Chapter 10, a time to talk and a time to be quiet, and I can certainly relate to that. Recently, I was in a tournament with my 8-year-old son, and I was caddying for him, and we completely disagreed on his club selection. He wanted his pitching wedge, and I suggested the 9-iron. As a result, he bogeyed the hole. He was 20 yards short. Mom was right, but the chattering, the chit-chat that was going on between my son and I, the other players heard it, and they were not happy about it.
Yeah, I can just see that happening, and that's just exactly the sort of thing that we're talking about, you know? And don't try to, you know, if it's your husband or your wife, be really careful, especially out on the course, offering advice. I did watch a person one time get so frustrated over time that she finally looked, and we were on about the 14th hole. This thing is right next to a big pond, and she had had the radish with his telling her what to do. She dropped the ball on the green with her putter, made a swing like it was a driver, and hit the ball about 50 yards across the pond, turned to her husband and said, "How is it that?"
Oh.
And she never touched a blade of grass with the swing on the ground. It was incredible. He never said another word the rest of that round.
You're listening to the voice of Peter Post. He is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show, as we talk about this new book, The Unwritten Rules of Golf. Tell us, I mean, what was the very best story that you received from that survey that you had posted online? Anything about some hole-in-ones?
There was a couple of hole-in-one stories. There was a story of a group of women who were out there, and one of them, you know, hit her ball in for a hole-in-one, and they were all excited and everything else. And it was almost like the next person was like, you know, how do I follow that up? Am I even going to bother to hit a shot? Sure enough, she hits her ball into the hole as well. That was pretty exciting. I thought that was a pretty neat story. But I think the stories I like the best are the stories of a guy who went out with his son, and he'd been playing, you know, with his son, and there's a group of guys behind him who were being held up, and the guy knew that they had been waiting for him a little bit, and that had been happening. And so the guys behind him, you know, they finally finished the ninth hole, and the drinks cart came over and brought them all beers that the guy had sent back to them, and saying, you know, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate your not pushing us, letting my son play and letting him learn a little bit about the game with me out there. And I just wanted to let you know you guys were okay. And he'd sent them out four beers. And that's the thing about golf. That's where I see golf being such a great thing for everybody to do and to enjoy out there. That, you know, there was four strangers getting beers from somebody because they'd done something nice for him.
Peter Post, the great-grandson of Emily Post and a passionate golfer. He is the author. He's a New York Times bestseller. And, of course, his new book is The Unwritten Rules of Golf, and you can go anywhere online and check that out. Such a pleasure to have you on our show. Peter, stay in touch. Let us know when you come to Houston. We'll take you out for a round of golf, okay?
I would love it, and I'll let you know. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you, sir. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. You stay close. Always the biggest and best in sports at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Wow, we got to take time to thank all of our amazing guests. Lee Klein, contributor with Slam Magazine, 76ers color commentator Malik Rose, Peter Post in his new book, The Unwritten Rules of Golf, Jonathan Gottschall, he's got a new book, The Professor in the Cage, and Mitch Lawrence, NBA columnist with NBC New York and NBA Sirius Radio. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell encouraging you not to drink and drive. Be safe over this holiday, and we'll see you next week for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. So long, everybody.